All right, and welcome to the Off Track Racing Show presented by BikeMade.com. We're coming at you guys from Whistler, BC in our temporary studio again today. We're moving around. It's Crankworks 2013, so we're improvising here. We're changing things up. We've got a mega show. We're just over halfway done Crankworks itself. Last weekend, we had the Enduro World Series here in Whistler, and of course, we had the Mount St. Anne World Cup. One legendary event in the making from my point of view here. I'm your host, Tristan Merrick, and like I said, we have a great show lined up. And joining us in studio today is my co-host. He's another one of the BikeMake.com employees. We've got Seb Kemp. Seb, thanks for joining us.
Well, interesting. You sound a little bit gruff there.
I've been on the microphone all week, my man. It's, yeah.
Lots. Sounds like you've been on the Marlboro Light, so.
I just want to sound a lot older, I guess.
Like Brad Ewan. This is the making of Brad Ewan, isn't it?
I just want to get the shut the front door voice.
Holy shiitake mushrooms.
I need to come up with my own sayings. But yeah, on the microphone and maybe partaking in activities until...
Wasn't he calling Jerome for running 27.5 wheels all year, and he's never ridden them once?
Who was me?
The commentary during the Enduro World Series. Jerome won 27.5 wheels.
Yeah, I can't be held accountable for what Cy Patton wants to say or thinks is going on, or if he's pitching a tent in his pants when Danny Hart comes down, because that's or anytime any Brit. I mean, I know Remy Gauvin came down in the Garbo the other day into first place, and then a Brit came down, was 50 seconds behind, and I could have sworn, had I not seen the race, he was 2 minutes ahead. But no further comment needed on that one. But
facts aren't important.
Yeah. Facts aren't important.
If you don't announce it, facts aren't important.
And of course, that voice you guys are hearing in the background, we have him in studio finally. We're not tuning in over the internet. We can actually control him a little bit more. It's not a half hour chit chat where I say one word. We've got Sven Martin, super fan, photographer, and it's a bit early for him today, apparently. He was.
I'm the only one shaved with a button up on.
So he's joining us, and of course we have another person joining us today. We had him the other day. His name is Chris Ball. He's super fan today. He's not the Enduro World Series director. Chris, how's Crankworks been treating you?
Early mornings doing interviews like this, or podcasts, or chats, or whatever, and late nights doing something similar but with more Jaeger bomb.
more bomb. You're less bomb, more Jaeger.
Apparently Boris says that's the trick.
That's the trick. And joining us, our third guest in studio, we've got the Mad Dog himself. We've got Boris, photographer, superstar, and on his way to wizard status each and every round of the World Cup that he's at. Boris, thanks for joining us in studio here today.
Cool to be here. You know, it's my first time in Whistler, so I'm pretty stoked, you know, all the new stuff. And yeah, a bit early also for me. I'm still wearing my knee pads from yesterday. Yeah, but I managed it. Sven told me before I came here, I have to manage it to go riding once a day to shoot work and to make parties. So it works out pretty well.
I think he's famous for being famous at Garfunkel's. Soderstrom and Brendan are standing in the line getting like denied. And Boris gets the velvet rope dipped and he walks in the VIP line. Soderstrom is, what the fuck? Boris is like, hey, it's my first night in Whistler, bro.
And this is where he's still in full riding gear.
Yeah. You know, it was late, you know, after the slideshow, we had some beers, first with Sven, then I met my team manager drunk in front of our hotel, so we had some more beers and some pizza. And I was a bit tired, so I fell asleep on the sofa. But I managed to walk up. Sven couldn't believe that I'm there at 8:10, so yeah, but I'm here. Cool.
The unofficial team manager for you, Sven Martin, kicking your ass in short order here, trying to get you set up, so...
Oh, talk about being led astray, eh?
Yeah, I know, that's totally a good idea. You should totally do that. So, like we said, we're a few days into Crankworks here, and or more than a few days, actually, and we had the Enduro World Series Whistler. I think we should touch on Mount St. Anne first here, legendary event. It's been in the works for almost 20-plus years here. Sven, Mad Dog, you guys are on the ground there. Pretty special race being a Canadian for me. I've ridden there in the past. And Stevie Smith coming down, getting the win. Pretty cool to see this guy. He doesn't seem like there's much phasing him at the moment. He was saying when I was chatting to him yesterday, maybe I'm just a slow learner because I haven't really jumped up in the last few years. It's just been a slow, steady progression to that kind of onto the box and now onto the top of the box.
It's maturation as a rider. Like he was the Brooke McDonald and now he's Steve Smith, and it's just maturing as a racer, I would say, more than a rider. Although saying that, he took the opposite approach at Montsenan. He's been consistent all year and he hasn't pushed the envelope. He's looked like he's steadily built up in practice. Montsenan, he's got seventh of the two World Cups and second at World Champs. So he's, being in Canada, that's huge misses for him each time. So he's like, how he's not going to be consistent. He had tough conditions. Dee, basically, who's ahead of him in the rankings, went down on a dry track, and then Steve had a lot harder track. Not as hard as some of the others before him, but definitely a lot harder than G. So he's like, screw it, I'm going to get 10th or crash or first. And that's basically counterproductive to how he's ridden all year to get the number two plate. But it worked for a win. I mean, I think to win, especially under those conditions, that's how you had a ride. So it went either way, and it went his way.
What were the conditions? So it started raining at what point in the race?
Pretty much after two riders off to G.
Yeah.
Yeah. G crashed in seeding. He has big crashes once and every year. And they usually get seen on... He almost cut his balls off. much to the dismay of the Sunday night Monsignan girls.
I talked with Josh Bryson yesterday about it, and he also saw the crash and said, "That is insane, this crash."
Did he see it live?
No, and also he saw the Helm Cam video. He said, "This is insane to go so fast in this section and then hitting in the woods." It's unreal.
He hit a tree from about 60k an hour to dead stop, and he was behind his seat trying to save it. And so basically, the back of the seat just hit him in the crotch area.
He got the hatchet across the nuts.
Yeah, well, the good thing about that is he'll be purely focused on South Africa because there's no distractions. He can't basically.
So he's now the eunuch.
He's the eunuch. And that might be the trick, you know? Some people have higher help, and Greg has the fan base, and G has no balls now. Well, hopefully he has some balls left because it's a fast track in South Africa.
Now, coming back to the question of what, it was my first time in Montsenan, and I'm pretty stoked about the ride with the crowd when they have their local rider there, and I was with goosebumps when Stevie coming down, because first the rain, it's worst conditions, and the crowd were going so insane. It was hard to shoot the all the stuff and the people walking down and shooting, because I was also shaking. It's always like this, it's so hard for me.
Yeah, you get
because I'm so excited about it and getting pumped, and so it was awesome, unforgettable moment to stay, to be there when Stevie wins for the whole, in front of his home crowd.
Especially when he's behind at both splits, so he's red on the board, and Steve's also, he sees the red, and it seems like that delay is probably about half a second, Chris, but it seemed long, because it took half a second, but it felt like half a minute for him to cross the line, get on the brakes, look back, and there was still that pause before when green, and the crowd was dead silent, and they being behind and not knowing what the outcome was, and then having it go red, it made it even that much, and in the conditions, it was like a big win for Canada, really.
Yeah.
And for everyone, I think everyone was pretty stoked.
Yeah, for him to pull it back, I didn't get to watch it live because we're out on track there for the enduro, and so just like amazing, like you said, Mad Dog, like getting goosebumps. It's like, I know he had won. I put it up. I'm watching the replay, and it's like he's down, like he's further back, and then it's like, how is he pulling this back in such tough conditions, and everything. So. To be a fan and watch that, it's so cool to see him win on home soil. I mean, short of us having a World Cup on the West Coast, that's as good as it gets for Canada. And he seems to be setting himself up pretty good for the rest of the season with Worlds, and then, of course, Liaugang, and then Norway later on this season.
So, Stevie, he won, he qualified first. Was it looking like this victory was on all weekend?
Did he qualify first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were there, weren't you, Sam?
Yeah. I
sometimes it's good. Yeah.
Let me look at the results here. Let me just figure this out.
You're in the middle of the track, and you don't often know the... I mean, I should know that one. Actually, yeah, he went down last, of course. He qualified first. But,
clean shaven, but maybe he knows what he's up to.
It was looking like him or G. Earlier on, it was looking like Blenkinsop and Danny would be in the mix. I think Sam Blenkinsop and Danny and Hill, those three guys, probably had a lot harder conditions than Stevie, although they seemed to start relatively close to him. Any of those three guys really could have been on it. I think maybe Blenky and Sam Hill ahead of Danny. Danny's just almost getting confident again in his head. But so those guys had a tough time. For Hill to get third in quite a bit tougher conditions than Stevie, I'd say, was even a bigger thing. And the times, I mean, from the timing was from first to 10th place is, less than 4 seconds in the top. And then from 10th to 20th, the gaps are even narrower. So it was a close field. And, G didn't have his best run, but he also had some issues on the lower third of the course with his bike or parts on his bike. So he also didn't get to have it. Like, everyone going, why was G so pissed? Because he had some other stuff going on. It wasn't just that was his run and he was riding injured.
What happened?
I don't think he had a properly functioning rear brake. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. Well, I just did.
For listeners at home, Sven just whacked his head on the wall.
that was Dan Brown just said, what the hell did you just say?
No, but coming back to the question, I see it from a different point of view, I think. Stevie's looking so smooth in training. So first you see them and then you see Blanky and Danny going so well. Brooke is going sideways all the time, and Stevie is always smooth, hitting his lines, and so it's kind of different. I like to see the boys going complete wild, and Stevie's not like this.
Makes better the time. He's got smoother though, hasn't he? Because he was more like that. You see that with Danny a little bit. He's tried to calm things down and direct things in a straight line, and I don't know if that's benefited his performances so much. I don't know. Stevie's definitely kind of tidied it up a bit, you know, Nick?
But I think you have to. These smoother, simpler tracks, even Montsenegro, without the weather, it would have been, I'm not going to say it would have been like Leogang, but they did a lot of work on the track, which is good, but it was really smooth, less turns, they took rocks out of the rock gardens, the tree sections, barely a tree section. If it didn't rain and the work on the track wasn't so soft that it got beat up, it wouldn't have been as good a race. So we're lucky for the rain. And because on the smoother tracks, I'm not going to call them even smooth, but you need power, and like Chris said, you've got to tidy it up. If you still have Maribor and Schladming and even Andorra, then you can ride like Blenky and Tiron, and you can get sideways because you've got
fall line, haven't you?
You've
got the acceleration and the gravity itself.
Yeah, and you've got to, you've got to power over things on the smoother, simpler tracks, and that's where G and Greg and those guys, and now Stevie, that's how they're riding. Things will change. It'll change in Andorra. And you put Schladming back on and you'll have Blenky and Hill that will probably, and maybe even Brendan on the podium if he's not on Instagram.
But that's how it should.
What do you mean? He's out doing whip lessons on A-Line. He's getting ready for that later on today with particular misses in the room here.
Well, no, I'm gonna get her to teach him how to actually go fast down the trail.
Yeah.
Just because you can do a dog pisser doesn't mean it means it's going to get you on the podium.
Let's move over to the women's results at Montsenegro as well. We saw Rachel not take the top step the first time this season, am I correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. First time that a GT hasn't been on a podium, hasn't had a win at a World Cup. First time GT hasn't had the team win at a World Cup all year. She qualified first, but she knew that Rago and Manon both had issues in their runs. And when we looked at the video, both Manon and Rago's crashes or offs in the qualifying, when you add this time gap, would have been quicker than Rachel in seeding. But Rachel also, she fell off a bridge in seeding, which no one knew about. So she was fairly confident, but she knew she had to push it, maybe more so than any other race. And she said, well, so the woman had the opposite track, was bone dry, and she lost her front wheel because of the dry conditions off a drop. So before the first split, she was 10 down from a crash. And then she thought, well, she can salvage points and get top two, top three, even being 10 down, she can make it back. And then she basically had hurt her arm in the first crash, and through the rocky slab section, she couldn't push through. Like, that's what everyone saw in the slow-mo. She literally just, she would be able to push through that normally and went over the bars again. And somehow adrenaline got her over the big jump that only four of the girls did. And now the question with her is her shoulder going to be okay for South Africa 2 weeks? But her crashing, take nothing away from Rago. I mean, Rago rode amazing and deserved the win. And the women's racing, they're pushing each other, you know? It's four or five girls that are pushing each other, so, yeah.
So what was the shoulder? Was it the existing shoulder injury she's had? I mean, she's had both shoulders.
Every Atherton has had every shoulder. So, I mean, there's not a shoulder untouched. And it's not bad to the fact, but it's you know, I don't know the outcome, but she, after the Seattle, she hurt her shoulder, took 4 weeks and won Fort William. Now she's got 2 weeks, and I don't know the extent of her shoulder injury. So South Africa, you're going fast, so you do need to be strong up top.
2 weeks leading into South Africa, right?
Dun, dun, World dun. The plot thickens. Yeah. Plot thickens. So yeah, I mean, the women's race, those girls are pushing, especially Manon. I mean, she's been rising at each and every race there, and she's getting stronger and learning those skills. It was cool to see her in town a few years ago at Crankworx and just to see where she's risen to already within those ranks. So
I think you can see there's only, I would say, two or three full-time professional women. When I say full-time, they're not going to university like some of the French girls in between in the off-season. They're not working or not doing anything to supplement the racing. They have coaches, they have trainers, full-time year-round, around the clock. And that is Manon. To go look at Manon's progress over 2 years, you know, Will Longdon is a huge part of that, as well as her trainer. And it does show you that, yeah, you can privateer to a certain extent, like someone like Jamie Nicol in the Enduro, but having the team structure, you know, whether it just allows for recovery and it takes the thinking out of the game. And it's, I mean, look at Manon now. You know, I wouldn't have said 2 years ago or 3 years ago that she'd be pretty much second in the world or third in the world with Rago. And that's just professionalism. And both the men's and the women's and Enduro now. Enduro has always been high level, but it's never been this professional. And it's just pushing the equipment and the riding to a new level, as well as the racing. You know, it's just professionalism. It's just fine-tuned all the sports and made the gaps between riders smaller.
Is that a good segue to move over to the West Coast?
Well, I think so. Got a couple of couches, sleep on the love seat. Someone keeps saying I'm insane to complain about a shotgun wedding and a stain on my shirt. Don't believe everything that you breathe. They get a parking violation and a maggot on your sleeve. So shave your face with some mace in the dark. Saving all your food stamps. Let's just get into it with you, Seb. You were on the ground the entire time during the Enduro World Series, Whistler.
On the ground? Because he couldn't make any of the drops.
Ooh.
I got no comeback for that.
I got nothing. So yeah, we did have the first Enduro World Series take place here in Whistler, and you know, what an event that is. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, blow it up here because we've got you, Chris, in the room and Seb, but
we didn't need to blow it up. Twitter was blowing it up, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For various reasons.
Yeah, for various reasons and everything else, but
that was post-event. It was going big before the event. Yeah.
I mean, I was competing in it, and I couldn't believe just how, I want to give Crankworx props, I want to give Seb Fremont and Darren and everybody that was on the ground to pull off such a huge event in terms of logistics and what tracks we got to race. I mean, we went way outside of what I kind of even thought possible, comparing it to where we got to race last year when it was just a Crankworx Enduro. It's just so amazing. It ran smoothly, other than a little electrical storm, which I think just added to the feeling of the event starting the day. Like, crap, I can't even get up the chairlift to go get to stage one. And then you get to stage one and you talk to people, and people didn't even make stage one because they'd crashed in Top of the World. You know, a few people had a pretty good off.
Really?
Yeah, I was talking to a few of the girls when I rolled up.
Some guy broke his wrist before dropping into stage one.
Yeah, yeah, like, and I'm not going to lie, I got off the peak chair when I was going to stage one, and I was like, okay, don't do anything stupid and tear a derailleur off, or Bennett going to, just getting to stage one. Such a crazy event.
So you were there racing, I was there floating around a bit like a bad smell around the top 20 trying to be a report.
Like a fart guys, I can't get out of
Chris
my pants.
Paul was driving around as well. We were all there, but you two guys out in Mont Saint Anne, were you able to follow anything?
I don't know. Boris in the pit area, he doesn't have 3G roaming.
Exactly.
He doesn't like smashing the data, so I was on the hill giving everyone the news and John Dawson, me and him, like, we just pop in and he was getting really pumped because his guys were looking good on the downhill and we basically saw that Jerome looked like he was going to take it. You know, we saw the first two stages and we were like, oh yeah, Jerome's got it in the bag. It looks like it's going his way and he just needs to defend the lead kind of thing, you know, like stage racing is. And then we went off and our finals happened and then like we hit refresh and I was like, holy shit, dude, Graves just pulled back a massive amount. And I think that stage five for everyone, even other guys, not just Graves, like,
Tyler Moreland got fourth in the stage, and a guy who self-proclaimed that he doesn't even train or do anything.
Yeah. And even Adam Craig, from what I remember from last year, that was a predominantly downhill stage. But because there was so much endurance involved, someone like Adam Craig was fifth fastest on that time, where you would never have put him, that you wouldn't have ranked him, you know, I would never have called Adam for top five time on top of the world, being long but more...
He's been working pretty hard on his downhill skills as well. So you're right. I think his fitness built on top of that skill. Then
I think so much of it's recovery as well. You know, like these guys are racing. That race was just massive. Like I don't think anyone can convey just how huge that day was for everyone. But
I'm still feeling the effects.
Quite a few guys are. But you know, Adam, with that huge aerobic base, that engine he's got, you can recover faster. And I didn't manage a full lap of stage five without stopping. We stopped like 3 or 4 times, like to shake our hands out and stuff. Like,
I'm just a child just bouncing down the bottom half of the hill, really.
And then I spoke to Jared, I think it was the Friday before, and said, have you done a full run of stage five yet? Like, what's it like? And he goes, I stopped twice for 10 seconds, no real problems, it'll be fine. And I'm like there nursing two bruised hands from rattling down it, you know?
Well, Joe, she said he may be overtrained and... He was following Jared, but those two were training all week. But he said by the time he did his stage five on Sunday, the race day, so his hands were just beaten. And at one point he was like forearms on the handlebar. He was worked. So yeah, it's a big, big day, eh?
And the one guy I think got lost a little bit in the mix was Rennie Wildhaber, you know?
Yeah.
He was on it all day. He's been building and building and he's been just outside that top three, you know, top five, fifth, sixth in the last few events. He wasn't sure if he was even going to do them all this year, and he obviously started off pretty strong, stronger than I think a few expected, surprised himself. He's been entering them as he goes. I spoke to him after stage four, and he was like, I said, what's your favourite one, Rennie? What's your favourite stage? Because most guys were saying four, and he goes, that's yet to come. And then off he went down the road, and I thought, that man means business. And then his chain, you know, he had a chain issue, drivetrain problem.
Yeah.
You could see he was pretty upset, and he dropped right down the rankings.
But
you could have seen a surprise there.
But that was part of the whole... strategizing and planning, because a lot of guys switched to a bigger chainring for stage five, and Jerome, for instance, I heard he had planned out mechanic knew he was coming. Basically, it was like a pit stop for him, F1 pit stop, and with proper wrenches, bike stand, and everything, got that chainring on and off. But I think Renee, he just had his, like, he did it somewhere else. He did the chainring swap out, but didn't have enough time to get the top guide dialed in or something. So, you know, that was, you know, unfortunate, but it's all part of that, is part of the racing.
Big
it's planning your race, planning your practice. Like, how many guys practiced a full day Saturday? Like, not many of them, right? And you only had 2 days to practice.
Mm.
Like,
tactics are just huge. You see it, you know, the guys are learning. And that's what I think has been so impressive with Jared and many, and Rennie as well. You know, the guys stepping into this without any real enduro racing experience, and they've dialed the tactics in so quick. And you see them are still a bit up and down and off the boil, and the guys like Nico, maybe more, not so much Fabian, he's had a couple of punctures this year, but Jerome, like, you look at their stage results, insane. They're so consistent, they're so on it, and that's why I thought Sunday, after stage four, with Jerome the way he was, I thought it's kind of in the bag here. What Jared did is just insane. Really,
yeah. I would say, yeah, pretty amazing. And just chatting to him afterwards at the finish line, and he just was like, yeah, I had a perfect run. And to say that on a 20 plus minute stage where you know you guys are saying that you're stopping, your hands are hurting, I know I was a passenger from pretty much the moment I left the gate on stage five, is pretty crazy to see. Like you said, he's he's stepped in, it's something new for him, and just how well he's, you know, excelling at it. That being said, it should be no surprise, I guess, because of how good his bike handling skills are. I mean, when he touched the BMX, he was amazing on it. When he was on the four cross bike, he was amazing on it. When he was on the downhill bike, he's amazing on it. So,
speaking of which, what do you reckon that Enduro World Series, has it been the perfect training for Jared for downhill world champs in South Africa, which he's racing, Chris?
I was going to ask, this is my first year in 11, I've not been in Mont Saint Anne, and I'm kind of like, oh, a bit itchy for some downhill as well, you know? And I was going to ask you guys your predictions on Worlds.
Yeah.
But after yesterday here in Whistler, Mick Hanna, second in air downhill yesterday.
Yeah.
Powerful man, good year, pretty happy. He's looking forward to it.
He won there before, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and Jared was he sixth there before? Jared goes well in Pietermaritzburg.
I think there's five races they can win it, and I'm not, or maybe six, and I'm not going to say who, and hopefully I'm not wrong, but...
For anyone that's tuned into this show yet, well, we'll try and squeeze that out of Sven. Otherwise, it's useless. Why do we get you in here if you're not going to say anything?
Well, okay. I can't say anything. And
yeah.
So okay, Mad Dog, then what are your predictions?
call a win. Come, Boris, call a win.
Win?
Yeah.
Boris, let's say the top five, you know.
The top five at Worlds is not. It's about top three at Worlds.
Top three.
Top three. I know you
top
want
to. No, you can
say. It's G, D. Oh, it's hard, you know. I can tell you five because.
No, it's three, Boris.
That means you got to give us three as well, Sven.
Yeah, I'm thinking now. I think it's going to be G, Mick, and Greg. It's going to be between those three. But then you got Steve, and you got Graves is unknown. Aaron is fit and conditioned, but I don't know his power there.
I think the average speeds in Pietermaritzburg are the highest on any course. Yeah, I think that first tabletop, they're hitting it roughly 74, 75 kilometres an hour.
Oh, my Lord.
Any of the guys coming into it from Enduro this year probably aren't used to that speed. You know, they'll have the power, they'll have the endurance, but are they going to be used to handling a bike at that speed? I don't know, for that long, 3 minutes at 75 kilometres an hour, whatever. It's 55 kilometres, I think, is the average speed there.
Yeah.
So that's a big factor. I think the guys getting, you know, from Mont Saint Anne, from these big fast courses, they'll be probably a bit more finely tuned to that.
And South Africa's a weird one, but everyone's always focused on the pedaling, you know. And like Chris said, it's a fast track, average speed. To have that big a pedal section, but have the average speed still that high, it's a downhill track, any which way you look at it. Is it the best one for world champs? Maybe not so, but it is what it is. So at the end of the day, 2 years in a row, G's been the fastest in the pedal section by quite a bit.
But Greg won it in the bottom section, right?
And
last year?
It's been one in the top section. It's been one on the top and the bottom. It hasn't been one in the middle split where the pedals are. That said, G has shown that he's definitely the fastest in the pedal sections. And he's also shown that he can put the top... He was slow last year on his first splits. They changed his training and warm-up. They've been doing gate start drills, like it's a BMX first straightaway. Like, you must see how they get those, you know, and that's just one, that's to get half a second on the first split. Like, I couldn't believe that they're training gate starts in downhill, but that gives you another half second, so G's first splits this year and his pedal splits are phenomenal. His third splits, and, you know, it's still the downhill track, so we'll see.
How big was the gap in Andorra, just in the pedal? It was so huge.
A 40-second, he had 2 seconds up on a 40-second split.
Over the entire
Road. But then Stevie Smith or Mitch, I'll call him Mitch, but Remy Tiron, he put that same gap on the bottom third, and that was the downhill course. And Steve Smith at Mont Saint Anne, the bottom third downhill course. So, South Africa's still a little bit changed, but it's anybody's game.
And of course, it'll be in South Africa, and there's one rider that's really been focused on this for a little while. Greg, who hasn't had the storm in World Cup season that we'd expect from him, has he been taking it easy in some respects to really to focus on this one race, a win in your home country on the World Championships?
No.
Greg also thrives on pressure, right?
Yeah.
So he's one of the guys who goes faster when it gets more pressurized.
Mm.
So I'd say it doesn't really almost matter in a way, like where he's been so far this year, because in his back garden, the pressure's on.
Hmm. I think the World Cup results.
He'll step up, I'm sure.
That's what I mean. I wonder.
I don't think you need to look at the World Cup results for this World Champs. I think it's a one day race.
That's what I mean. I wonder whether he's been taking it easy to protect himself physically without injuries.
These guys race every race. At Crankworx here, like Steve Smith, the only guy that treats like Air Daniel and Canadian Open like a World Cup. Those other guys can't bring their mental game to the same levels at a World Cup. But Steve Smith said to him, he's racing as hard as he's racing in the World Cup. Other guys, Greg said, he can't, if it's not a World Cup or a World Champs, he can't race at that level.
Hmm.
He just can't push himself. That's why you never see him and Gwen when they do local races or not World Cups. They're getting beat by guys that never get beat up at a World Cup. But that's the mental approach.
I thought that was because of the size of their rear end.
Let's talk about Jamie Nicol.
Yeah, Jamie Nicol, privateer, Kiwi.
Awesome.
Tough as nails.
Sick.
Yeah, just, I mean, what he's done this year. He ended up staying with me in Colorado because we had like an apartment with the Dirt TV guys, and we were having dinner on the first night, and he was wandering around trying to find someone to stay with, and it was about 9 o'clock at night.
He didn't pack his tent.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine if he didn't have anywhere to stay, you just like hollow out some kind of mountain and sleep inside that.
But he was wandering around the town, just like, guys, have you seen anywhere with a spare room? I was like, dude, we've got a spare bed. Come stay with us for at least for tonight, because I knew that he wasn't going to find anywhere that night, and then he ended up just staying the whole week. That was him there.
Steak dinners on the Enduro World Series.
But he's just here. I love it because he's just here purely for the riding. He's just so into what he's doing, and you know, to get that result was well deserved on the weekend. There, that's amazing.
He's been a Department of Conservation worker up in New Zealand. Like literally, he'd be 3 weeks in the backcountry up on Franz Josef Glacier, and that, you know, I think, you know, this is not like a did a trot or anything like that, but that's the kind of hardness, that's like the Rocky Balboa training for enduro. And Seb sent a tweet after the race or something, and I just read, stubbornly, what did he say, stubbornly strong or stubbornly...
Yeah, he's just so physically strong, but he's also like very stubborn-headed.
His head overrides his body, and you know, he's not the prettiest or the like most stylish rider through a section, but he just smashes stuff.
Definitely, and a lot of the stuff I've seen this year with enduro is a lot of guys are kind of analysing and looking at it like multiple stage downhill races. It's not. There's way more to it than that. You know, we've talked about the precision in downhill, but then this element that Jamie, for example, and a bunch of other guys have brought to it is kind of like, you know, you say stubbornness. You could just argue it's
like
kind of like
Rene rides like that.
Just a toughness. Rene, exactly. Yeah. Jerome, Jared, you know, Fabian, Nico. They have this. I don't know what it is. It's like they won't back
really
down, to use PE's slogan. It's
available
awesome.
On DVD around Las Vegas town.
Las
Vegas.
Meadows Cradle, Clay Porter, John Lorna.
Yeah. I also would say it's perfect for a series. It would have privateers on the top beating the big guys. This makes it so special and brings it back to the real feeling of enduro.
Yeah,
well, it's possible for privateer beating the big guys when they are with the trainers, with the trucks and everything, and there comes a guy and shows them how it works.
Well, for sure. I mean, the big thing coming into this weekend was we had four big stages, two big climbs before anyone could get any help. So it was a genuine test of how the rider was going to handle it. There was guys zip-tying, like top five guys, zip-tying pedals back together after stage one. There was guys snapping gear cables. You know, and I wrote in the letter I write to all the riders before the race, I was like, if you guys don't know how to fix your bike, you're going to have to learn fast. Because a lot of those people rely on the support. And then we just saw, you know, Jamie Nicol, one-man band.
Yeah.
So
duct tape.
Yeah. But that's what it's about, you know.
Number nine fencing wire, isn't it? The key.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess for you, Chris, like how, from your standpoint, did the race unfold exactly how you expected this year in terms of at Whistler? Like you said, it was a massive race, lots of stages. And the first, you know, first real time that, it was like, hey, well, we'll see you guys after you've completed four stages. Is that like where you envision it going later on in the future with a lot of the rounds, or do you just want to keep it different each and every one? Sometimes there's chairlifts, sometimes and you have support every lap, or not so much.
Really good question. We could probably do a podcast on that alone. You know, we have to remember that, you know, Fred Glow really the man who started the whole thing 10 years ago. That was a chairlift based race, right? Enrico with the rally style format, you know, that's gone incredibly well, super enduro. And I loved the, in Punta Ala, the guys went out for two stages, came back, they had, well, they originally had 20 minutes, we increased that to 40 minutes. So the mechanics said they were like, they felt like they were in battle, they didn't know what they were going to see. Guys come back in for two stages, the mechanics are frantically trying to fix stuff. You know, the guys are off trying to feed, and then they go out for another two stages and come back again. So it does add an incredible element that I love, and it feels much more like riding your bike to me, you know, like you're out there. Like when we rode last Monday, you know, we got dropped off by this plane and it was like we were on our own.
Yeah.
And that's what Sunday here felt like. It's like, guys, you're on your own, you know. I was standing at the bottom of stage two, and this dude's rolling up and they got punctures and all sorts of stuff going on, and I've got a truck and a backpack and whatever, and I was like, guys, I really want to help you, because normally I would just come over and help pump your tire up while you're feeding, but I can't touch it. No outside assistance, deal with it. And they were like looking at me going, I kind of get what you're doing, but damn, yeah, just help me out here. And I'm like, no, sorry, guys.
I understand the rules, but this is really, really difficult. And,
yeah.
And
talking to Rudy.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess as a rider out there, I know every time I saw somebody, it was like, you doing okay? Like, do you need anything? And, you know, I've done some longer races, Seb, you've done the Four Kings and stuff as well, where it's that kind of, you know, community feel. You're trying to help out other riders if you need it. You know, I packed kind of the minimum. I had a trailer hanger, I had a tube, I had had some zip ties, some duct tape, and a derailleur cable. You know, I didn't come across anybody that needed that, but it was interesting to see everybody's tactics. Like, do you have a backpack? Do you not have a backpack? Do you chance it for four stages and hope you don't have anything? And yeah, I think some people were probably really caught off guard by how it unfolded.
People were caught off guard before the first stage even started. You uplifted on the gondola and it started raining, the cloud had come in, and there was thunder and lightning. All of a sudden people realised, I'm at 2,000 metres on top of an exposed peak without a jacket.
Yeah. I've been amazed at how many guys do not wear a pack or bring a jacket or whatever. I'm like, who? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm too overprepared on a ride, but seriously, like, you got to carry some stuff and prepare for pretty much anything. You're in the mountains for a start, you know?
Yeah.
Well, then, Sven, what do you think?
You carry plenty of bags, don't you?
Plenty
of baggage.
Boris carries the heavy stuff.
No, I came to Canada without a jacket, so I just one jumper with me, just shorts, and, you know, I'm...
Oddly enough, it started to rain outside, but we started chatting here.
But what I want to say, you know, and... Colorado, EWS, and here a lot of North American riders up in the top 20, and JC from local kid. What, I mean, will they now put the effort in and get to Europe? Because what I find disappointing, and there's other people from all around the world, they all over Europe and they're getting themselves here, but it seems like North Americans, if they don't have it provided for them as racers, they're not used to privateering. They're not used to, I mean, you see the Kiwis on the downhill circuit. Those guys are sleeping six deep in a studio apartment or camping or...
The Brits are the same, right?
Yeah, the Brits. They there's this privateer feel, and that's part of life. They're getting... besides the racing, they're having a blast. The stuff those guys get up to. Why aren't we seeing the North American riders? Why do they have to have, you know... If you're not supported like Curtis Keene, why aren't they out there? You know, where is Schussler and Buell and all those guys, why aren't they doing the whole series? And all the top guys and all the North American enduro races, it's disappointing to see them as enduro riders not go pay the dues in Europe. I mean, that's, you have to do it. Same as World Cup racing. You don't constantly race once and then win them. But, like, are North Americans too privileged and they're not willing to live out of a bag? And, I mean, why aren't those guys in Europe?
You've eaten the food there.
Huh?
You've eaten the food there, why would they?
I'm ready to go eat the food again.
There's no Kool-Aid over there.
If you do look at it, there's lots of North American races that have always complained about how bad the living conditions are in Europe and to go and race there.
But they're not going there.
I agree that that needs to, that kind of nonsense needs to be dropped.
Yeah.
Because they should be hitting the road and doing exactly what you say. Like, maybe, you know, living the privateer lifestyle a little bit more, going and suffering. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see that now. Cause
now
I
that
think
they've had the taste of Brian up there.
Yeah, definitely. So, Brian Buell, I was riding with Brian, and we were riding 2 days ago, Seb, and he said he was going to try and organise a bunch of guys to get over to Europe next year.
And that's what they're going to do.
He's seen what they're missing.
Buy a van, buy a transporter, and just do it.
100% though, like, look at the strength and depth. And we'll look at downhill because it's got more history. We're in year one of Enduro World Series. there's no the Americans often or Canadians, you know, they produce a top rider, one or two top guys, drop outside the top 10, 20, they definitely drop off pretty quick. And you look at the Brits and they're like, or the Kiwis to a certain extent. It's like every, you know, first to 10th, 10th to 20th, 20th to 30th, there's a few of those nations. And that depth comes from these groups, as you say, Sven, of like dudes just traveling, making it happen. Yeah. You don't see that from the North Americans as much, for sure.
And like I said, hopefully they've had a taste of what it will be like, and you know, but you know, just historically, you haven't seen them come do the mega or come do one of the French races or whatever. So I'm really keen to see them putting not just a full season, just to see them adapt to the different courses. Because the thing is, a lot of the riding there, even some of the bike park trails, are historic trading routes from 1,000 years ago, and the way the trails are, you know, here a hiking trail is designed for hiking. There, hiking trail built 1,000 years ago is designed to get an ox or a mule or a cart. So it's some, you know, there's just so much that affects the, you know, there's a certain style of riding. I remember when you know, Mark Weir, he's one of the few guys that actually did go to Europe all the time and put his time in, and he's like, I need to go build switchbacks when I get home because I cannot ride switchbacks. Mm-hmm. Because like they're just, you know, they're this is fall line or bike park in North America, you know. And
we can't forget Ben Cruz, he said the exact same thing. He's done his
summer in Europe.
He
based himself in Europe, and he said he probably wants to live there next summer. He loves it, and you know, he's had some ups and downs this year, but yeah.
It's interesting to see where it goes, isn't it? Because we've got quite a few South Americans here as well. You know, that's a strong contingent too. There's a lot of guys.
I'd like to see an Enduro World Series round in Southern Hemisphere.
So would I. Because one's got a weasel and other's got a flag. One's on the pole, shove the other in the bag. With the rerun shows and the cocaine nose jug, the daytime crap of the folk singer's club. He hung himself with a guitar string, a slab of turkey neck, and it's hanging from a pigeon wing.
I mean, every round's been amazing so far as a fan in that aspect, you know, standing back and just watching where it is. So, you know, I think Seb and I have talked about it a bit. We want to be interesting to see where you decide to take it in the future, but not making it too big where then it's kind of diluted, or it makes it hard to have these privateers like Jamie Nicol and other people chase around. You know, if you make it too many stops, it becomes like the FMB. It's just, you know, too difficult to do it on that level, and then it just becomes an expense, too much of an expense for these younger riders, these riders that just don't have the support or just can't really go into that financial debt to, you know, it's racing at the end of the day. And if you have a few bad rounds and you're spending a lot of money to get to those rounds, it's hard on the checkbook at the end of the day, right? You know,
it's a huge challenge.
And it's bittersweet. You look at Ben Cruz, fair enough, he's on the Cannondale team, but if that was coming out of his pocket, he has not had the season you want to, you know, he's had a financial crisis if he was paying out of his pocket for this season.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be interesting to see what happens come around contract negotiation time, Vegas and Eurovision. There's going to be lots of riders approaching that. I think I've already spoke to some North America riders who were talking, trying to get over to the last rounds.
Yeah.
Which they weren't planning to. The last rounds of the Enduro World Series, which they weren't planning on.
They've got to put themselves.
They've
on
had the
radar.
Taste. I think they've had the taste. They've realized that they actually have potential, and they also realize they need to bump it up and get out there.
They have brought so much to the table. I think, you know, these last two rounds, seeing this kind of relatively unknown faces, and because the enduro community, you know, yes, we're in year one in the World Series, but it's been going on a long time in Central Europe, you know.
Yeah. We got a question.
Oh,
how much gnar from the from the off track readers? How much gnar is too much gnar? So for enduro, Chris, how much gnar is too much gnar?
How much gnar is too much?
Bear in mind that's a pro as well as, you know, it could be someone's first weekend and they've entered and you know, you're not catering for everybody, but how much gnar is too much gnar on a, I mean, you guys
good question.
Put some stage 3 or 4, some big gnar in that?
I think actually in Whistler here, some of the liaisons were gnarlier than some of the stages. Like AC/DC, the you know, we had to make a little adjustment to stage three, and the liaison out of that was probably consistently the gnarliest.
Hey, hike up this rock. Oh yeah, it's like really steep on the other side. There's a lot of loose, blown out boulders. Like, yeah, somebody that rides that track all the time. That was one of the things I thought. I was blown out after the third stage, and I was like, okay, yeah, AC/DC is good, and I like roll into the rock pitch, and I was like, oh crap, Jesus, I should have tightened down the backpack a little bit here. Like, you know, like.
So how much is two gnar?
Well, there's kind of, there's two parts to that question. There's gnar physical gnar, mm-hmm. like this was a massive day here in Whistler.
That's why
there's technical gnar.
That's why,
right?
That's why I didn't do this one, by the way.
Yeah.
Valalos, 12,000 meters of chairlift downhill, I'm in that one. finale, I'm getting an e-bike and I'm slotting right in.
We want to make enduro feel like you've genuinely achieved something when you cross the finish line. You know, especially for the amateurs, the racers are the top end guys. They're always going to race. Give them like an easy course, give them a hard course. They're going to race it to the maximum, right? But the guys further down, they need that sense of achievement, collective. That like we made it through that day. Like we had it at Transforms last year. Each day we were like, damn, we made it. Yeah, you want to stamp like I achieved finale. I got through all stages. So that there's that gnar element, and then there's the tech gnar. Don't want to see it go don't want to see it go like downhill races where guys are generally intimidated and taking too much risk. But we want to keep the progression. So I think here and some of the rock gardens in Punta Ala were about the maximum in terms of technicality,
But I think what surprises most of North Americans when they come to Europe, they'd be like, but this is downhill. Like on the enduro stages, I've ridden as technical, if not more technical, on my trail bike than you know, essentially you're riding down a downhill course in places. It might be a slower speed, awkward tech, but I've definitely ridden more technical tracks on enduro than in the current downhill World Cup field. To hit them fast and to gap certain gaps, you need a downhill bike on a World Cup. But a lot of the tracks in this Enduro World Series have been more technical and I'd say more gnar.
Mm.
And not just because you're riding a little bike. It would be whether you're on a little bike or a downhill bike, they have been more technical. So that's a lot of a misconception in North America there. But this is downhilling. It's like, no, this is what enduro is. You don't need flat tracks. You don't need a percentage of pedaling. You don't need a high heart rate. And you don't need a skin suit. You
know? I think that is one of the statements that... who is it? It was in the Vital slideshow. One of the North American riders, I really apologize if I'm forgetting the name right now. But he made the comment, he said that the mellowest parts of the Whistler round were just as technical as the hardest of the previous North American races they've
Colorado.
Been doing. Not just Colorado,
the,
I think some of the other
North American
series,
and the Big Mountain series.
And that should say something about a certain intent.
Yeah. And Boris, how much gnar is too gnar in downhill? Look at Andorra. The riders loved it.
Yeah.
You know?
You don't think, the history of enduro, but the whole point for me, like if you touched on it before with it's walking tracks you're often on. Downhill's so manicured that even the technical sections.
It's getting more manicured is the problem.
Yeah.
We're relying on traffic and
TV. Yeah. The TV element, the televisual stuff, that's manicuring downhill courses, and you can only ever make them so technical. Whereas they're still designer and riding a bike on, right? Like the jumps have to be a certain length and hit just for the right speed, which means a burn before is going to be just right. In enduro, you're riding on trails aren't necessarily prepared for bikes.
It's just disjointed.
So it's just the way it is. It's like if I go for a bike ride in Lake Garda, they're ancient walking trails. The corners are built for donkeys, like you said. You know, they're not built for bikes. You've got to get around them. The rock slabs the wrong way. There's a hell of a lot of exposure. Whatever it is, you got to deal with it.
And
so,
the snowpack that melts every year, so, you know.
Yeah, you're in the mountains a lot of the time, or you're just on trails that just aren't designed for bikes.
So it's maybe not necessarily what's too gnar, but what's too challenging. Because I think that's what gnar essentially means, is the challenge. Mm. You said physicality and the technicity.
Yeah.
Well, that's the word I heard this weekend.
Technicity.
Technicity.
That's a good name for a trail.
Yeah.
The thing is, if it's not gnar, you can ride it faster, right? So a simple section is as difficult as a gnar section, if not more difficult. Hitting a slightly off camber, decreasing radius turn at a high speed,
to me, it's a lot harder to hit it fast and correct than going down a chute with your brakes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because you've usually got a 50-kilo camera pack on, being pulled off the side of the mountain,
chasing you or Sib,
and tell us to stop and do it again. You want to get your Instagram updated?
Yeah. Quick,
the filler didn't look great. I want to do it again.
Brake bolts rattling out.
Yeah.
Bike barely hanging together.
I think it was Riddle. I'm looking at your text message.
Riddle.
I think it was Riddle that said that comment on there.
Yeah. And that was cool to hear, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think that's been a traditional preconception that North American races are easier because they're less technical, and then Europeans have been the true challenge, more technical. So it's been kind of cool to show people that North America has got something, and the races have got something to show as well. So
yeah, it's all good. It's all good in downhill and enduro, pushing people in different directions, all being pushed forward.
Well, it was cool to see the amateurs do what they did on Sunday. You know, hardtail riders, people with like some dodgy looking bikes out there, but that was cool just to see everybody out there doing it. And
I'd say the other thing on that, talking to the, not just the amateurs, but we've seen really big women's fields in enduro, which has been amazing. Like a lot of women, a lot more women than World Cup downhill.
I'm going to say, and not for women, but you touched on it there, enduro for me has always been a participation sport, and it's become a spectator sport and a marketing sport, and enduro is the cash crowd, you know, enduro and 650B, people love that to sell product. But Seb's just shaking his head, I'm saying, but enduro, I think, you know, at a World Cup level, downhill is always thriving, and I don't see it ever fading, but at a participation level, you know, you can't argue with the fact that, you know, when you can ride your bike all day, you know, and like you said, the women fields, like someone entering the sport now is going to be, you know, you had your cross country bike or your dirt jump, and then there was a big gap, and then, you know, you trail rode, but you couldn't race, like you couldn't get that same feel you get from downhill, which now you can, you know. So I don't think, yeah, downhill's not going to suffer because of enduro, but like you said, for women and for participation and not just for amateurs, but it's really, you know, it's the best bang for your buck for a weekend riding with some mates.
For sure.
I think we had that sentiment from amateurs and pros alike all weekend during the day. They all said they really enjoyed being on their bike. Because let's face it, I think anybody that is around here at Crankworx right now, or anyone that was doing the enduro race, or anyone that's here in the studio, like, completely addicted to bikes.
Yeah. And
in an unhealthy way. And so I think the more time we can spend on a bike, the better. So I think in that enduro format, really, it does give you more bang for your buck, spending it all day. And it was really nice to see some pro athletes, and generally, sometimes you can think of a pro athlete as being someone who's paid to ride their bike. Do they ever enjoy it?
Yeah.
It was great to see them genuinely enjoying riding their bike. Like, I spoke to some people, I'm so impressed at their sentiment, just loving being out on their bike.
What appeals to me, the different, you know, each race organizer has a slightly different practice way, but what I think is the last couple of rounds, when you have especially a variety of terrain like here or in the Alps, the fact that you really only have 2 or 3 days that are dedicated to the race, guys like to come in early to sample like the other cols in Val d'Alos, you know, to go down Col d'Alos or to go to Colmars, the next town, or for here, all the guys that were here like 2 weeks ago that came from Colorado, they came here. You know, people doing floatplane trips, people going to Squamish and Pemberton and riding the other valley trails. That to me is what it's about. You know, you're sampling a culture and an area and the trails. It's not about coming and just, you know, like Punta Ala, that was the only downside is like people probably only rode those trails, and there's a lot of other good trails in the area. So the current like last few rounds format for as a bike rider, you spend that money to be there, but you're getting the whole experience of the area. Like these, you know, you saw all the Euros, they were just, you know, they were all over the show posting stuff from, you know, they're just riding all the famous Whistler trails and the valley trails, and that's what it's about, you know.
Annika Beerton said that to me. She said she's never, like, she's been racing at the top level forever, right, you know, four cross downhill, but she said she's never ridden her bike as much as this year, and she was genuinely just absolutely stoked on the amount of riding she was getting done this year on so many different trails. She said, like, I used to travel and just do one track. Now I'm seeing what, you know, us as mountain bikers often do. You know, you go somewhere and you try and ride as many different things as possible.
Putting the mountain
amazing
into biking.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Right? You go to the races and you go do the race run. You just train the course. You don't get to get, you know, I've done the Canada Cups and stuff, and you just, that's all you do. And I just, you know, I think that was the coolest thing. As much as the race was in my backyard and I've ridden all these trails, I'm like, I want to go do another round. A, because it's racing and it's fun, but B, just to go explore something new, you know, go explore all these trails. And it was cool to see guys roaming around in town, and you know, we talked about it on the last podcast, you know, Timo and Fabian, everybody was like, yeah, I've never had a bike when I've been in Whistler that can let me go explore. I've gone to Lost Lake, and you're like, well, that, you know, everything else isn't like Lost Lake. And just everybody out there having a good one and checking out everything. And
On the flip side, it's hard to be on the side of a track and watch the world's best bike handlers on, like, pushing themselves and their equipment to the absolute millisecond. You know, downhill, when you're actually witnessing it up close, you know, everyone, like, looks at the results in the photos, but when you see how hard these are, and that is the opposite of endurance, riding the track over and over again and seeing what they can milk out of the track, and even 5 minute, 4 minute tracks, and they're still within hundreds, thousands of seconds, you know, that is also, it blows you away, you know?
That's the extreme, isn't it?
You'll never get the intensity.
Yeah. What is better, F1 or World Rally? There is no answer to that, you know?
Yeah.
They're very different. I don't think they should really be compared. No. They're just two completely different styles of riding and racing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They benefit each other, but yeah, they're not in competition with each other.
Exactly. So, exactly.
So, over to the last segment, I suppose. XC Eliminator.
There's five of us around this table. Let's go racing.
Yeah. I totally won.
Let's go. Yeah. What you just have to do? Let's go do Eliminator.
Yeah. Let's just go do an A-line lap, and I can be the A-line Eliminator.
There's a lot of downhillers that watch women's XCE for this one Swedish girl that's always on the podium. Yeah, that's all.
I was announcing the Canada Cup XC race yesterday, and good looking girls cruising around. The
under 23 women's cross country racing is probably the most spectated sport by the men's downhill field. They do not ever miss it. It somehow falls right in the gap between, like, on their Saturday where there's no. I think they skip practice sometimes to watch it, really. Yeah.
And that is why Brendan's been losing. He's been skipping practice to go stare at Norks, bouncing around.
He's about to go
spandex
for a day with your bird, so you better watch out.
He doesn't know what he's getting himself in.
Yeah. Well, I think just due to some timing things, we're going to wrap things up here. So, of course, guys, I want to thank you for coming in and joining us in the studio. I mean, we could talk so long and so much about everything. So, again, Boris, thanks for joining us here. Always a pleasure. We'll have to get you on more.
Let's hear some shout-out to Germany.
Yeah. Oh,
biggest bike market in Europe. Let's hear it, Boris.
Come on. You know
German.
About, in German.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Boris
it's
from Germany.
It's hard to switch, you know, because I'm used to
Boris, you're German, switch, dude.
Okay, es war
the real
dance monkey dance.
It's just a bully.
Es war ziemlich abgefahren hier. Es war, now my German sentence is so weird, you know, I'm mixing
Boris,
it up.
Boris, just speak German.
Es war ziemlich geil, an meinem dritten Tag Whistler hier dabei gewesen zu sein. Interessante Sachen über die Enduro World Series zu hören.
What's off track in German?
Von der Strecke.
There we go.
Off track, leben. So, es war der Hammer und bis zum nächsten Jahr. Ich werde in den nächsten 10 Jahren keinen Whistler mehr, keinen Crankworks mehr verpassen. Danke. Thank you, man.
And of course, Sven, thanks for taking the time here. I know you put up with me on the internet on a regular basis, so it's good to have you in the studio. And
Better than
2 a.m. and just interesting to see your bullying tactics against the riders. Will be a therapy group needed for these riders when they retire later in life. Yeah, and Boris.
Whipping boy.
Yeah, you can stand up to him.
He's learning a lot. His photography is just shot up over the last year, so that's hopefully what I'm giving back to him.
And any parting words from you today?
No, I have to say no. At first, I have to thank you, and I'm not sure. I just think you don't like it, but he's some kind of mentor for me. You know, I have to say, you know, it's without you, I wouldn't be here, and I think the whole thing, what we're doing here, would be different. You know,
so passion.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
The biggest key for anyone working, like when I see these kids, like yesterday, and they got 2 days ago, Gobonza, they're these two little kids. And they were there last year, and I, like, stopped at them last year. And when I say little kids, these guys are 8-year-olds, right? And they got their They both had cameras, and last year, like, I stopped to pull off because I got my backpack, and I jumped the zip open, and they go like, "Hey, dude, you're in our shot." And I'm like, "This is like, hey, and I saw these kids today, and they were lined up by the, you know, where everyone ends up on GoPro in the gully section, and then like these kids were there before us, and like some of the other photographers were like, "Hey, yo, get out of the way." And I'm like, "No, dude." Yeah. Those kids, they here first, and I don't care. They're like, they maybe 10 years old this time, or 11, and the one who's got a broken arm, but he's still out there. And I remember from last time, I was like, cool, this is passion,
yeah.
And I've got a lot of time for people with passion, and passion for the sport. You know, we're not doing it, we're just doing it for the life and the passion, so
yeah.
I love it.
Me too.
This is so very cool to hear, actually, with the kids and stuff. That's amazing. Yeah. And Chris, thank you for taking the time again. We had you last week. Good to have you in here again, and I gotta say thanks for putting on such an amazing Enduro World Series round here in Whistler and all the other rounds.
Well, really, I mean, Darren and the Crankworks team have done, you know, they've learned a lot. They've done an incredible job. I wouldn't like to take that from them for sure. But thanks for having me. It's always good to come here. You can't leave here and not be inspired by the passion. It sounds so cliched, but like, there's so much, I don't know, just love of mountain biking going on and
all right,
in
bro,
the best sense, so it's good.
Wrap it up.
And Seb, thanks for being the co-host again today.
Thank you, Tristan.
We'll be cranking things out here again and again. This is the Off Track Show presented by BikeMag.com, and make sure you guys stay up to date on our Twitter account, off_trackMTB. And we're gonna head out and go get some runs in here and move on to things.
Is this thing on?
check. You can take your entourage now, Sven. Your multiple camera guys. And again, guys, thank you very much for tuning in, and we will check you guys at the next round in a couple weeks' time with Worlds.